Chapter 15. Brienne, unsurprisingly, was avoiding him. The morning after the disastrous game of hide-and-seek, Jamie woke to a note. His valet left it on the stand next to the wash bin. Jamie knew what it said before he so much as broke the seal. Miss Tarth was begging off from their appointment to spar. He could not claim surprise or blame her for being reluctant to find herself alone in his company. He had kissed her. Jamie Lannister had been presented with countless opportunities to kiss any number of women in his life. From sullied young misses to bored matrons to lusty widows to trained courtesans, he had been tempted on occasion. He was a red-blooded man of no little vigor, but he had never, ever indulged. He'd only ever wanted one woman, for all the good it had done him. But if he was going to begin sampling, there were many better choices than an inexperienced miss whose reputation could be ruined for it. True, there was no denying he was fond of the chit. Very fond. Nor could he pretend that it was a wholly new desire. The sight of her walking out of the woods that first day had all but burned itself onto the insides of his eyelids. She would never be a beauty. But just then, striding forth, hair wild and damp muslin clinging to the long, strong lines of her, countless freckles marking out constellations on her skin, she had seemed otherworldly, a pagan goddess ready to smite all who dare approach. Jamie had been struck for a long moment, and was only brought back to himself by her sharp words. No, it wasn't that he couldn't imagine kissing her. He had done so then, and on more than one occasion since. It was that he had somehow taken sufficient leave of his senses to actually submit to the impulse. He had stared into her plain freckled face and her huge lovely eyes, and it was done before he'd known it had begun. His heart had leapt, had ached with a kind of longing that he had never felt before, except perhaps for Cersei, but that was a ridiculous comparison. No two creatures in existence could have less in common than Brienne Tarth and Cersei Lannister. Cersei, who had whispered in his father's ear that Jaime was thinking of marrying, enough impetus to make the great Lord Casterly bestir himself to provide Jaime an annotated list of acceptable choices. He had burned it at the first opportunity. Jaime had no intention of marrying any of them. No intention of marrying at all, in fact. Yet, he still had to set out for Harrenhal where the bulk of the list would be present. It was a habit. He attended every year. All in all, it was an inoffensive event. He hardly had anything better to do with himself. It would keep both his father and Cersei satisfied that he was doing their bidding for the immediate future. There was an entire litany of perfectly rational reasons he could tell himself, that he had told himself, for why he made the trip to Harrenhal. But only one came to mind when he let the cacophony of justifications die down. Brienne would be there. Brienne would be there, and he had missed her. Brienne was here, and he was missing her now. Because he had fantastically, idiotically mucked things up. Because he had kissed her. For a woman of her stature, Brienne proved very good at hiding herself. She did not appear in the breakfast room at the usual time, nor any time during the surrounding hours. Subtle investigation revealed that she had taken her meal in her room, and one of the maids even told Peck that Miss Tarth had definitely emerged at some point, though where she went from there was anyone's guess. Jaime turned his attention to Lady Sansa's whereabouts, reasoning that wherever the little Stark went, Brienne would never be far behind. But Lady Sansa, too, was nowhere to be found, and his options for further inquiry on that score were distasteful at best. He preferred to avoid so much as breathing in the direction of the bright-eyed girls she called friends, and her favored suitor was Joffrey, whom Jaime spent as little time with as he possibly could. How much of that was habit, and how much simple preference, was one of the many things he studiously avoided examining. The next hours were whiled away in surreptitious search of various points of interest within the manor and on the grounds. At length, Jamie's pride could bear up under such an assault no longer, and he abandoned the search, choosing instead to fix himself at a billiards table, which he found to be useful for practicing fine and subtle movements with his right hand until he needed to dress for dinner. There, in the Boltons' massive dining room, his search finally ended when both Lady Sansa and Brienne appeared for the evening meal. Brienne looked well in a conservative blue gown and bore no signs of falling into a decline or being otherwise significantly altered. She would not, however, meet his eyes down the table or so much as look in his direction. The inane natterings over port in a smoke-filled study seemed to take even longer than usual after the meal, and Jamie was convinced that by the time he made it to the parlor, Brienne would have found some excuse to retire back to her room where he could not reach her. Blessedly, she did not, and he found her seated near the piano as Sansa played to the effusive delight of the people gathered nearby. Jamie maneuvered, glared, and even pushed his way through to take a seat beside Brienne. She gave him the barest nod of acknowledgement, as if they were little more than acquaintances, but he saw the flush beginning on her neck when he leaned in closer. "We should talk," Jamie said, pitching his voice low enough that no one but her would hear it over the music. "We are speaking right now," Brienne said flatly. "Privately," he insisted. "My lord, there is nothing you need say to me that requires privacy," Jamie bristled. Why did she have to make this so blasted difficult? "Don't you believe I should be the one to determine that?" She still would not look at him. "I believe that I've had more than enough of your decision-making." Fine, then. If she was set on being stubborn, he could be as well. They could have this out right here.
"I apologized," he began.
"Yes, more than once. I did not ask you to.
Nor did you accept any of them, despite the fact that you seemed to require some sort of penance as evidenced by your hiding from me all day."
"Fine," Brienne replied firmly. "Your apology is accepted." Jamie stared at her profile as she sat, still as a statue. He wanted to take her by the shoulders, hold her face in his hands, force her to look at him.
"I have a difficult time believing that when you are still acting like this."
"Acting like what?" she demanded. "The only thing I am doing is being abominably rude by whispering with you while my very good friend is in the middle of a performance on the pianoforte."
"Brienne," he growled. "Just her name, though somehow more pleading than gruff."
At last she turned to him, though he wished she had not. Her blue eyes were fierce, but so very sad, her face drawn, as if she was wearied by the effort of just being near him.
"I did not fault you for your error. I spoke of it to no one, and I have no intention of doing so. I told you never to mind it, and even when you ignored that, I accepted the apology you offered nevertheless. I have asked nothing of you."
She sighed deeply, and her voice broke when she continued,
"What more could you possibly ask of me?"
Jamie did not answer. For all his searching and sullenness, he had no answer, none that was fair or right. What could he ask of her after his foolishness, after so betraying their friendship? For her to ignore her own discomfort and upset, to stay close to him and amuse him, and bicker with him regardless of how she might feel about it? To spend her morning sparring with a broken old cripple, her days laughing at his jests, and her evening suffering his teasing? And to do it all for no other reason than he wanted her to, because he was lonely, because he didn't have anyone else. He had sworn to cut down any man who used her ill, and not for a moment considered his own guilt in that quarter. Lady Sansa reached the crescendo of her piece, lilting notes rising higher, before a last deep calm. Jamie excused himself as the applause began.
He considered the billiards room, but it was crowded with more men than he felt like being forced to socialize with at the moment. Being alone in his own rooms with his thoughts did not seem particularly appealing either. He ended up in one of the smaller sitting rooms, where card games were being played. He joined a game of whist, to which he paid very little attention. Jamie shared the table with an unremarkable boy of no more than 18, whose name he did not ask and did not care to have. A weaselly fellow, he was half certain was a fray cousin of his, by way of his Aunt Jenna, and a large man with a thick ginger beard, called Cunnington. For the first few hands, they spoke only as much as the game required, which suited Jamie perfectly. But once Cunnington made it through his glass of wine, one of many, Jamie imagined, he became more talkative, and he very quickly hit upon the last line of conversation Jamie was interested in pursuing.
"You know the Viscount even Falls' daughter, don't you?"
Cunnington asked, eyes gleaming. Jamie only nodded, and with deliberately exaggerated movements, played a card. Cunnington was unperturbed.
"Is it true she's been going around in breeches early in the mornings?"
"At times," Jamie answered, hoping the clear chill in his voice would end Connington's obnoxious inquiry. Connington snorted at this.
"Ugh, some people never change, I suppose,"
he muttered before quieting. Except now, it was Jamie's interest that was piqued.
"Are you acquainted with Miss Tarth?"
he asked as Connington waved over a servant to fetch him a fresh glass.
"More than acquainted," Cunnington exclaimed. "Our fathers betrothed us when I was barely breeched and she was in swaddling clothes."
The murmur of conversation and the other sounds in the room ceased with the swiftness of a candle blown out. All Jamie heard was a distant buzzing in his ears.
"You are to be wed,"
he managed, the words stilted. In all of their conversations, in all the months they'd spent together, she'd never once mentioned an engagement.
"Or, I went to visit her some years back,"
Cunnington said, forcefully.
"She was still in the schoolroom and could look me in the eye even then. I had only to see her to know that she wouldn't suit me or any other man. I gave her a flower and cried off. I could hardly credit it when she actually came to London years later. Bigger and uglier than ever. Don't know how the boys could stomach that bet on her virtue. No one ever did claim it, though. I suppose they all lost their nerve as soon as they took a look at."
Jamie did not know when he had risen, but it was with such force that his chair was upended with a clatter, and he struck Cunnington across the face so hard that the man's chair was knocked over as well, with him in it. A woman screamed over the sound of splintering wood, and a clamor of voices and footsteps followed. Jamie ignored it all, kneeling over Cunnington where he lay sprawled on the parquet floor, spitting blood, and grabbed his cravat and the front of his vest in one tight handful. Cunnington was wild-eyed and incredulous.
"If you were not already half a cripple, I would have you name your friends," he shouted.
"Her name is Miss Tarth," he said, eyes boring into Connington's, his blood hot in his veins. "You claim to be a gentleman, and you are speaking of a peer's daughter, a future peeress in her own right. You will call her by her name, and you will use it with respect, or you will not speak of her at all. Say it."
"Miss Tarth," Cunnington sneered. "Miss Brienne Tarth."
Jamie released him. The fury, near blinding as it had been, finally receded such that he could register his surroundings once more. Nearly everyone in the house had piled into the room, staring and whispering and having cases of the vapors. And there at the center, with a wide-eyed Lady Sansa clinging to one arm, was Brienne. Jamie scrambled to his feet. Brienne's eyes were huge with shock, but more than that, her expression as she looked at him was one of confusion, of utter bafflement. And at that moment, the realization broke over Jamie like a sudden drenching downpour, washing away all of the justifications and rationalizations and outright lies he'd told himself. He was infatuated with her. He was absolutely, absurdly infatuated with Brienne Tarth. He ignored the gasps and whispers and shouts as he broke through the crowd and fled, like a coward, to his room. A few hours worth of pacing, with a brief respite to write a note of apology to the host and hostess, did nothing to improve his situation. But there was little that could improve a situation such as his, a grown man of 37, nursing a ridiculous tendre for a debutante. It was the kind of thing that should have been gotten over with decades past. But of course, much like his failure to sample the more carnal pleasures, back then he'd neither the time nor the inclination to become besotted with every intriguing thing in skirts that wandered by. There had only been Cersei, completely filling every corner of his vision. And now he was left thus, 20 years later, an overgrown schoolboy with no recourse, for Brienne wasn't a courtesan or a widow or anyone else with whom he could have an affair until they tired of each other. He was no debaucher of virgins, and he had no intention of being so. Brienne should marry, would marry despite her apparent belief otherwise, and she neither should worry or marry him, even if he wished it. And matrimonial wishes were a thing of the past for him. He could seduce her. The way she had responded to his kiss, strong body melting deliciously into his, let him know that she was in no way immune to him. But she would be even angrier at him afterwards, eventually, for taking away her future for a moment of succor, just because his was desolate. And she'd be right to be. The best thing he could possibly do for her would be to leave her alone, as he'd tried to do tonight before turning around and doubtless making them the talk of the house party by knocking down a man for speaking poorly of her. It was almost funny, the near farcical nature of the thing. Or it would have been, if it hadn't been happening to him. Light scratching at his dressing room door broke his train of thought. His valet, Lou, returning to help him undress. Except, when Jamie called for Lou to come in, Brienne appeared. "What are you doing here?" he asked, unblinking. If he blinked, he half expected her to reveal herself to be an apparition created by his clearly fevered mind. Not that her attire was really the sort of thing a man would dream up, except in that she was prepared for bed. Her hair had been released from its chignon and arranged in an only slightly less severe braid down her back. Her clothing, well, he could only guess at most of it, in all honesty. She wore a massive brocade dressing gown, blue with a pattern of starbursts and crescent moons. The amount of fabric managed to make even Brienne look too small for it, and though tied tight, it revealed not so much as a hint of her figure. All that was visible, besides her hands and her head, was a large pair of pale freckled feet, ensconced in slippers that peeked out from beneath the hem of her absurd wrapper. It was by far the least seductive apparel he'd ever seen, and yet so quintessentially Brienne that his cock twitched in his breeches like a dog catching a scent. I wanted to thank you, she said. He was moving towards her against his volition, and he was oddly proud of her for not staggering backwards. For downstairs, it was particularly violent, Jamie supplied, but satisfying. Yes, she mildly agreed. A scant foot from her, he managed to call up all the reasons he should stop. You really shouldn't be here, she sniffed. Of course not, but I didn't know if you'd leave. Because of the altercation, and I didn't want to miss you. She eyed him dubiously, and it was embarrassing the way his chest lifted at that. Since when does propriety concern you? Since I realized all the ways I could have wronged you by ignoring it, he replied. She blushed, and blood rushed and pooled far lower in his own body in response. I was angry, she said. She was wringing her hands together, the wide sleeves of her dressing robe slipping down over the hem as she fidgeted. When you kissed me, I thought that it was just that you didn't care, that you thought I shouldn't care because of the way I look, but it's obvious now. It's not that you don't care, you just don't think. Jamie laughed, a sudden loud bark of mirth that he couldn't hold back. Brienne's brow furrowed. Well, it's true. Certainly Ronnie Connington has deserved to be knocked down for quite some time, but in the middle of a Harrenhal sitting room? Really? He wanted to tell her to leave now, before he proceeded with not thinking again. I truly am sorry, he said instead, sincerely, about the kiss. It was an awful thing for me to do to you. I understand that. She reddened further, her eyes glancing off at various other points in the room besides his face. I wouldn't say that it was awful, she allowed. Jamie grinned. Well, I feel damned with rather faint praise. It was nice, she said, finally meeting his eyes again. Nice to know what it felt like. Just this once. This once? You'll be kissed many more times, Jamie said, though he misliked the thought. Just as well, if you're lucky. Brienne's small, sad smile held genuine amusement. Jamie knew, with a sudden certainty, before she even opened her mouth, that he was about to be lost. No, she said simply. I won't. He drew her to him, and she came willingly, his hands cradling her face as he pressed his lips to hers. Her lips were even softer than the night before, and she tasted even sweeter as she opened her mouth to him. The reasons he shouldn't storm through his mind, but the press of her lips, little sighs in the back of her throat were an anchor. You should have dozens of kisses each day, he whispered fiercely against her mouth before kissing the corners, then her chin, her cheeks, the curve of her neck. Hundreds of thousands a year, innumerable in your lifetime. She gave a little sigh as they broke apart briefly. Jamie, she said on the exhalation. It shot through him like a lightning bolt, like the first ray of sunshine peeking through the clouds. Just a kiss, he told himself as he claimed her mouth again, as she mimicked his movements, pressing closer to him. A kiss was a little thing, next to nothing. There was no way a kiss could ruin them both.